if you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with Destiny.
Greetings in the living love, living light, and living word of the one divine beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Understanding and Enjoying the Game of Life by Playing It Consciously and Transcending It. So if you're ready, call yourself forward. Evoke your divine principles, your spirit, soul, into your body. Take a deep breath and breathe it in all the way down to your toes. With your next breath, you're going to fire a beautiful envelope of intense, holy Shekinah fire, holy light of the Holy Spirit, all around your physical body. Just see yourself as an effulgent flame. Make it a color that works for you. I like to use pure white, but use whatever feels right for you color-wise, okay? Take a deep breath. And see yourself as just flaming glory. Really speaking, your light body looks very much like that. In the Bible, it says we are a flame of fire. We are candles before the Lord. And it also says that we are described as ministers of God by the description, flaming candles. That's a beautiful analogy. If you think of your body as a candle, and the upper part of the body as the flame, the higher chakras, the chalice, so to speak. And so in that context, we're a holy offering. We're a divine offering, an oblation at all times before the Supreme Beloved. And when we live our lives in that sacred sense of identity, we live actually in the kingdom of heaven now while we're on the earth. And every place we place our feet becomes holy ground because we walk as a holy oblation, as a holy flame of divine glory. That is who we are, regardless of how the physical appearance presents. That would be our karmic field. We remain that unblemished, pure, divine spirit, forever united as one with divine source. We have never left the heart of God. In fact, we are the heart of God. And here in time, space, we but extend the heart of God. We but extend the grace and the love of God to all creation. That's why we're here. That's what we do. So let's chant the ancient name for God. I like to call it the heavenly universal name because it's Hu, H-U. Now when you sing that, it automatically resonates the highest, most indescribable aspect of God is reflected in that resonant field of the hue. You can't name that which is beyond name. You can't conceptualize that which is beyond form, but you can get a little reflection of that And as you chant you, it automatically brings you into alignment with that divine it of itself, that which is, that transcends time and space. And any of the game plans and things that are occurring in these lower psychic and material realms. And it quiets the mind. It brings a centeredness and a clarity. So whenever you need to tune in and return your mind to sanity and peace, use the hue. It can be sung out loud. It can be thought in the mind. It can be whispered. It can be chanted separately, H, U, or together as HU. So let's chant it together as HU. Deep breath. HU. And you might want to go to sleep at night chanting the HU. That will bring you into a very high state of vibration. And it's a wonderful thing to teach your children. So understanding and enjoying the game of life by playing it consciously and transcending it. You know, Sai Baba said in an interview with us, life is a game. Play it. And I found that rather annoying because I have always disliked games intensely. Even as a child, I never wanted to waste time playing games. I wanted to know reality. I wanted to experience reality. I wanted to know where we go when we drop the body. I wanted to know where God lives. Up there in the clouds. Where? Where is God? What is real? What is reality? I was obsessed with these thoughts as a very, very young child. I used to climb up into the trees and look into the sky and wonder how far I would have to travel to find God. But it's interesting because it's the journey without distance to a destination that we have never left, except in a part of our mind which for a moment bought into the idea of separation. But that was a good thing, because how can you appreciate something that you're one with if you've never had the contrasting experience of its absence? So we can't fault ourselves for coming into the viewpoint of separation, because we're having now the enjoyment of returning our awareness. And you know what? The more you return your awareness to the reality of your oneness with God, to the reality that you are the living love, you are the living light, you are the living word, and you are the one beloved. There is no other. There is only the one beloved. And that's who you are, and I am, and we all are. But individualized expressions of that one love that's unique to each one of us. So no one can be replaced in the particular energetic field that you present as that living love, living light, and living word, because it is unique to each one. So we never lose that sense of individualized being as we awaken and merge in our wholeness with our original wholeness. So when we incarnate on planet Earth, we've entered a playing field. It's a field of activity governed by karma and ultimately transcended by dharma. I'll explain that in a little while. I want to develop this a little bit more in sense of the game. So first of all, we need to get a sense of the playing field, which would be our current incarnation's environment. And then our karma, which would be our position within the playing field and game. Our placement in life, who we are and what we've come in with to contribute to the game of life. The objective is to stay present and focused and do our best to play well and win. To win the game of life on planet Earth, we must stay on top of our game and not allow the game to overwhelm and overtake us, which would be causing us to go unconscious. So sometimes the game gets so heated that you forget who you are. Just like when you're watching sports sometimes on television or in the actual bleachers, you forget who you are. You get so into the game. We have to always keep ourselves a little bit back in the witnessing stage so we don't go unconscious and lose ourselves in the game. So to stay on top of the game of life, we must stay conscious and proactively participate while remembering that we're not the game. We're not the players. We are a conscious participant, but we can also choose to leave the playing field or even to change our game plan altogether, for we as spirits are in control here. We have to notify these levels of our human personality of that fact, however, because otherwise we live out of a false sense of self that we call the ego. And it is not in control, but it thinks it is in control. So we have to gradually import our higher awareness into the mind, into the causal or emotional body, and into the imaginative or astral body, and then into the physical body, which then is a puppet of the mind and the emotions that cause it to act. So you can play the game without attachment to the game. And when you've learned how to do that, you've won and can exit the playing field of Earth. You don't have to come back here once you've learned what it's all about, unless, of course, you're a bodhisattva and choose to do that. Now, the game has some guidelines, which I think a clever anonymous soul has articulated quite well in 10 points. So here would be the 10 points that could sort of serve as an orientation to incarnating on Earth. Number one, you will receive a physical body. Number two, you will learn lessons. Number three, there are no mistakes, only lessons. Number four, a lesson is repeated until learned. Number five, learning lessons does not end. Number six, there is no better than here and now. Number seven, others are merely mirrors of you. Number eight, what you make of your life is up to you. Number nine, your answers are all inside you. Number 10, you will forget all of this. So, number 10 gives us our overall purpose here, to awaken and remember, which is to basically to return our mind to divine recollection, to remember our original divine wholeness and holiness, and that we share forever with God. So every relationship with another and every encounter, every experience in life has the potential of awakening us to our inherent divinity or further imprisoning us in more karmic consequences. So how we use our relationships, how we use our encounters, decides whether we bind ourselves more fully or begin the process of self-liberation. And it all depends on what we choose to use that relationship, encounter, and experience for. So will we use it to fortify our ego, that is to say, our sense of separation, Or will we use it to reveal our divinity, our sense of kinship with all life? Will we use it to unify? And when we use life situations and encounters to promote unity and goodwill, we are actually walking the path of self-mastery, and we have become a divine functionary and co-worker. And I think that's where a great many of you who listen regularly are finding yourself. Perhaps I am simply pointing out the fact that your life, that may not seem outwardly tremendously phenomenal, is tremendously significant in terms of determining where this collective humanity is going to ultimately go. Because we, as initiates, as disciples, as the ground-based volunteers, as the earth crew, we're the ones that is the collective way-shower for humanity. You don't need a lot of people to shift the paradigm. You only need a very small percentage. And we already have that percentage that is active and participating now on the planet. And it is bringing everything up to the surface. That's what you see on the news. You're seeing your good works, because it's uprooting that which has been the hidden dis-ease in the collective mind. It's bringing it to a head. The earth is actually going through a healing crisis. Everything's coming up. And it has to, so that it can be dissolved back into the nothingness from which it came. And it is a nothingness, because the only reality is love. And love is God. So, in speaking about karma and dharma, how do you tell the difference? Here is a way to discern. Because karma and dharma are the motivating factors in the game of life, it's important that we understand what they look like when they're manifesting. So in playing the game of life, we gradually transform karmically binding activity to dharma, which would be the ability to act without generating more karma, which is by maintaining and acting from spiritual awareness by staying conscious. That's also called being mindful, staying mindful, living mindfully. So here's the difference. Karma always has conflict somewhere in it. Why? Because karma, in this context in which we're looking at it, always has been generated from the past. It's your past experience that has not been resolved peacefully within yourself, which binds you then to the consequences. The word karma only means activity, but we're looking here at the word karma in terms of actions which bind us to a repeat, so that the balance and the healing can take place. Now, dharma always has peace inherent in it. So karma always has conflict somewhere in it. Dharma always has peace inherent in it. You might say dharma is the behavior of your true self. Karma is the behavior of a person who is still attached to whatever it is they do. So karma arises from the personal self. Dharma from the transpersonal self. What is that? You could call it your high self, call it soul awareness, or you could call it the monad or the I am. When that part of you acts through you, you are an agent of dharma, and you do not pick up karma if you stay conscious and you're not identifying with the doing. So karma arises from the past, dharma from the present. Karma is ego-centric, dharma is atma-centric, or spiritually centric. Karma arises from guilt. Dharma from bliss, or love. And it's interesting, I was shown how we create in the God realms beyond the psychic and material realms, which would be beneath the soul plane. So in descending order, you have the soul plane, which is the first realm of pure spirit. And then you have the etheric realm, which would be the great void, the great darkness. You have then the causal or the mental realm. You have the causal realm, which is the plane of causation. You have the astral realm. You have the physical etheric realm, which would be the energy body or the prana body, and then you have the physical realm. So you have all of these gradations of densification that form as a subtle body on each of these planes. And when you act out of those realms beneath the soul realm, you generate karma. But you can learn to act from the soul realm, from soul awareness, and then you don't generate karma. But it's a real trick to stay conscious. And that would be the path that we would call the path of yoga. Yoga means to live consciously in union with the divine, not just, you know, to do exercises. That's only a very small part of what would be called yoga. So yoga, by simple definition, would be to stay divinely yoked, in divine union, all the time. So the inner mediator between dharma, karma and dharma, would be seva, or service. So when you're in the mode of serving, in a desireless manner, this would be selfless service, or desireless activity, called in Sanskrit nishkama karma, then you're bridging, you're moving from karma into dharma. And that's where we're all parked in our missions to planet Earth. We're all practicing service and working to make it more and more impersonal, more and more neutral, more and more where we stay out of it and we allow that which is greater to operate through us. So seva, or service, is of two kinds. Either it's tainted by the ego, which would have an agenda of expected return, or it's dharmic seva, which would be acting as God out of impersonal divine love. So a simple way to tell if you're acting out of ego or higher awareness is to ask yourself, is my intention to cause separation here, or to unify? Very good. You know, when you get into an argument, or you start to get offended or upset, or you start to develop a negative attitude to someone, stop and ask yourself, what's my intention here? Do I want separation to happen, or do I want to unite? You know, if you would ask a feuding, fighting couple, who are into a heated argument, if they really wanted to separate from their loved one, I bet 9 times out of 10 they would say, well, no, of course not. I want him or her to love me. But we don't get love when we're attacking. We cause the ire and the ego of that other person to respond in like kind. We call it forward. We bait the bear. And the bear, you know, comes forth and gobbles us up. So be careful when you are interacting with your loved one. And always remember, is my intention here to separate or unite? So the ego is the very form that the idea of separation took. Ego has no other form but the thought of separation. So to perpetrate separation, ego absolutely must instigate strife. It has to perpetrate strife and offense and generate conflict. Otherwise, it's going to dissolve in love. And that's the last thing the ego wants. Like everything else, it wants to exist. Even though it's a false self, it wants to exist. Now, according to Sai Baba, anger is the worst expression of the ego. He said a very scary thing to us. He said that 1 minute of anger dissipates 2 months' worth of the energy built up from our spiritual practice. Wow, 2 months' worth of spiritual energy that we've built up, Shakti, has dissipated with 1 minute of anger. And it poisons the liver and the bloodstream as well. It just releases this whole bunch of negative chemicals, which cause aging and disease. It's like whenever the body is used lovelessly, you're self-destructing. So it's really important to work to uproot the cause of anger. And 9 times out of 10, we're angry because we feel victimized in some way by life. And we haven't found that part of us that is the divine conqueror. But there's always a reason why we have these passions of the mind. They're often called, anger being one of the worst passions of the mind. And Sai Baba said that an angry person is like a mad dog attacking his own reflection in a mirror. That's kind of a funny image, so that can break. You know, humor is a great thing to break the intensity of the ego when it's in mid-rant. So whenever anger arises, Sai Baba suggests that immediately you go silent and leave the scene. Drink cold water and take a brisk walk. Or, if possible, lie down and take a nap. And I always say, you know, breathe that sucker out. You just go, take it, Lord. Take it. I don't want it. Fill me with your love. Take this anger. Anger has no part in me. Now, one of the ways as counselors and teachers and friends and loved ones and well-wishers and do-gooders, some of the ways we pick up karma is because we get into other people's battle zones and get involved in a battle that's not ours. So be careful not to allow things you see or hear or read pertaining to other people get to you emotionally, where it becomes suddenly your battle and you didn't have anything to do with it. But you get the karma anyway because you poked your nose in there. So really practice tending to your own 10 acres. Tend to your own battle zones, your own business, and your own personal responsibilities in life. And before you get involved in someone else's battle, and this happens often when we're watching television, especially now these political debates, it's very easy to all of a sudden get upset and angry and go into attitudes of againstness because of what some politician is saying. Why should we care what they say or don't say? It's their karma. It's their karma. Learn to watch those things without reaction. If you watch them at all, learn to stay in that neutral state, which is the higher awareness of soul. Stay in the balcony. Don't get down on the arena and start duking it out when it isn't your fight. So if you allow things in the lives of others to get to you and upset you emotionally, you then take on some of that karma, even without actually having karma with that person or situation yourself. So karma is no respecter of persons because it will clear through anyone who identifies with a situation. So generally karma will clear through the purest and brightest energy field available, And often that is the energy of a baby, a child, or a pet. And there's, you know, more and more we hear accounts of where it seems rather obvious that a dog, for example, has taken on the illness on behalf of its owner. So another even more sobering thought is that childhood illness and even crib deaths can sometimes be traced to fighting parents or a sudden divorce or other forms of negativity in the environment. Some really refined, highly evolved souls will simply decide to leave rather than to continue in a negative environment. In ancient times, the pregnant woman was kept in an aura of beauty and peace, and they were not allowed to see negative imagery. They weren't allowed to be subjected to influences that could affect the child in utero. That's really difficult to achieve that sort of thing today. But you can if you, you know, if you really want to. You can do anything if you really want to do it. So as we mature spiritually, we come to realize that we are held personally accountable for every thought, word, and deed, and emotional feeling that we host and express, and every belief that we espouse. And Jesus made it clear when he said that to think of another person with lust is the same as having committed the act of adultery with that person. And to hate another was the same as having murdered. So Jesus made no distinction between what we harbor within in terms of our feelings and the intent of our heart and the actual acting out of those feelings and intentions. So this is a very tough teaching that very few people are actually mature enough spiritually to accept. But accept we must at some point. And the fact is, we only have karma with ourselves, within our own fields of consciousness, energy, thoughts, and feelings. So the issue is not the issue itself, but how we feel and think about the issue. So this is important information for all of us who are teachers and counselors and working with people day in, day out, as I am, for example, because we have to say the things that people are not being told. They're largely not being told this in churches or even by psychologists and psychiatrists. Largely, people are placated into thinking that the fault lies in their childhood or something that happened to them at some point. They don't bring them to the fact that everything that happens in our life we have created, allowed, promoted, requested, or have done in the past and are now reaping in the present. There's no leeway in this. There's no wiggle room. There's no wiggle room. There's only the path of mastering ourselves. And we do that through life experiences and through screwing up and incarnating again and again and facing the same lessons over and over. And as the saying goes, the lesson will not leave your life until you've learned the lesson. So we have to pay attention to what keeps showing up in our life. Why do we keep marrying and divorcing the same person, basically, the same karmic pattern? Why do we keep getting into the same situations in our jobs? We change jobs, we go into the same situation again and again. Lessons that haven't been learned yet. Very simple. Learn the lesson. You exit the arena. Now, Sai Baba has likened the events playing out in our current world scenarios as a replay of the ancient battle called the Mahabharata. Many of you probably have read that, and maybe some of you haven't, but it was a battle between the forces of evil and the forces of righteousness. At that time, during the original Mahabharata, there were 5 righteous people and 100 unrighteous. And during that battle, some 5,000 or more years ago, although the evil forces greatly outnumbered those of righteousness, still the light won. Dharma prevailed. Dharma always wins. Always. Regardless of how it seems to play out, always Dharma, truth, righteousness wins. Now, at that time, it was played out amongst individuals who embodied different states of consciousness. However, today, the same battle is being waged amongst nations. Someone coined the phrase, the battle is between the sheep nations and the goat nations. And you can infer from the nature of these two, what they're describing here. So nations are fighting amongst themselves largely over power. Power for positions of control over that power. And the power as they see it is in who has control over the natural resources, oil being one. Basically, it's all about money, power, and acquiring positions of supremacy and control over planetary resources. That's the cause of all the conflict we see in the world. The other area involves which ideology rules and reigns over the minds of individuals. Again, who controls the masses controls the world. So world domination is always the agenda of the ego or the negative power that we could call Satan or the devil or the call power or darkness or the falsehood. You can call it all sorts of things, but it does the same works, the works of darkness, the works of conflict, the works of hatred and warring and differentiation and separation and dividing and conquering. So power, control, domination, really, this is seen playing out in some manner in every group of people, every nation on the planet. And even within families, you'll see the same power play going on as to who's boss, who's in the position of control over the family members. And John Roger has taught us that whoever is lording it over others is actually embodying that negative power, is actually operating under the call power. So we have to learn to decide, what are we going to serve, love or power? And from the spiritual point of view, it is but the age-old battle between the call, the negative power, and the spirit or divine love. So power or love? What motivates us? What motivates us? What's behind that action? What's behind those words? What's behind that behavior? Control, manipulation, domination. That is the works of darkness. Truth and the knowing of truth alone will set you free. And where you bind and confine and entrap another, you bind, confine, and entrap yourself. What you free and loosen in another, you've loosened and freed in yourself. Now I'm going to shift a little bit because I have a little bit of information that the Ashtar Command wanted me to communicate to the ground-based crew. And according to what I've been given to understand, the lines have pretty well been drawn as to who is predominantly operating in the power plays on the planet and who is more aligned with the loving. And this will determine which of the many timeline scenarios individuals will be drawn into. It's not 100% decided what humanity is going to decide to do in this particular cycle of time We're on the eve of going into 2016 tonight, on the eve just before New Year's Eve. And it looks like it's up for grabs. There's lots of things coming up on the surface. There's lots of very good choices being made. There's lots of really wonderful, highly evolved souls that are moving into positions and fulfilling their dharma. And so, from my point of view, it looks very good. I am a person who's come back in time from the future. And the scenario that I have seen has been a very wonderful one of going into the Golden Age. Sai Baba, however, on the other hand, has said that only the souls firmly rooted in devotion, those who are governed by love, will be moving into this Golden Age, that the rest will be swept away in a swirl of chaos, blown away like chaff, were the words that he used. And I was present physically when he said that. So it's not to say there's not going to be a lot of wind blowing and a lot of chaff in the breeze and, a lot of things happening. In fact, I think that the command very clearly showed Solariel and I last night that there was going to be a lot of uprooting, that everything that had been based upon the ego was going to be uprooted financially, business, and how we govern things on the planet. That everything that can be shaken will be shaken. And everything that doesn't serve the progression of soul into a greater, more enlightened and loving way of living is going to collapse. Will we see any of that? I don't think a lot of us will, quite frankly. In any case, the state of consciousness that you consistently live out of is going to determine which of the many parallel probable timeline realities you will be drawn into. So it will be perfect in any case, as each will go the way of their predominant state of consciousness. We've been told again and again that not one soul will be lost. However, in some cases, it may be another 26,000 years before another opportunity similar to the present one will present itself, if at all. Sai Baba has said, beware. If you do not take this opportunity of saving yourself, when will you? When will you make that decision? Be aware that this time will not come again. Be aware that this time will not come again, quoting Sai Baba. He also said that he had the power as an avatar to turn earth into sky and sky into earth. To doubt this is to prove that you're incapable of grasping great things, the grandeur of the universe. You come to me seeking petty cures and promotions, tinsels and trash. Very few of you have come for what I have come to give, namely liberation itself. And even among you few, very few of you will stick to the path of spiritual sadhana and succeed. So we have an opportunity like no other time. We are at the close of a 26,000-year cycle, a 2,500-year cycle, or excuse me, 2,500-year cycle. We're in the close of a Mayan cycle of 3,000-something. We're at the close of many, many, many cycles right now. It's a very unique time on the planet. So if you are a person who finds yourself upon a bona fide spiritual path, which means every day you are able to source and express more and more divine love and divine peace, and more joy fills you, Those are the signs that you're on a bona fide spiritual path. More peace, more joy, more love, greater well-being. Then it could be understood that you are on a path that's really, really working for you. We get to a point where the things that used to bother us don't even faze us anymore. We have a certain equanimity that comes when you walk a genuine spiritual path. And, you know, everyone that I'm speaking to can find that reference point that I'm speaking of. You just really are changed from within. So if you are a person who has been mentored by a genuine spiritual enlightened teacher, you have the opportunity of fully awakening and transcending the playing field and all the various games of that earth life presents right now in this incarnation. Be aware, pay attention, make this life count. So in which case, if you're such a person, you will very likely not experience a timeline where there is total global upheaval and chaos. The Bible states that only from a distance will the righteous witness the recompense of the wicked. So now on the eve of 2016, we may indeed be entering a cycle where an intensification of clashing energies, ideologies, and game plans occurs. We may be. I'm not going to prophesy that because that's not my function. And nobody knows, really, if they're present in the here and now, which way the horse is going to trot on this field. So I want you to know this. You are all encoded with coordinates that align you with a specific star lineage and spiritual family, and a specific starship, a specific interstellar alliance. Those of you who listen to me regularly are obviously ground crew members of the Ashtar Galactic Command. Some of you have attained mastery upon other planetary worlds and systems, and your awareness has been gradually upgraded and expanding to where when it is needed in its fullness, it will be there. You can count on that. It will activate as needed. Your star nation encodements will activate exactly as required in the moment. In the event of a catastrophic global event, and I am not saying that there will be one. The Ashtar Command is not saying there will be one. But if there were to be one, you would be shifted out of that time-space coordinate in a nanosecond to where you would never even be aware anything had occurred. The Ashtar Galactic Command works directly through the Office of the Christ, the Order of Melchizedek, the lineage of the spiritual travelers of divine light and sound, the divine avatars, Babaji, Sai Baba, and others. So you have a very pure lineage and alliance that's looking out for you. And be aware, we are looking out for every one of our ground-based volunteers, moreover, for all of humanity, because we have within our heart the well-being of all. So every one of you is well known to us and monitored 24/7 as to your location and your state of being. All volunteers here in service to humanity must realize that you're not part of the evolving Earth life waves. You've come in to serve primarily as midwives in Earth and humanity's birthing. They're being birthed into a less dense physical body called an etheric physical body, which looks physical, looks solid, looks dense, but it's much more refined, has a higher vibratory rate. It's more crystalline and less carbon-based. In fact, many of you are wearing crystalline bodies now, and you don't even realize it because it looks like everyone else's body. But I, who can see clairvoyantly, can see the tremendous purity and light in your auric fields when I look at you. And sometimes it just brings me to tears because you're so magnificent. You know, that's what God has blessed me to be able to see, is your divine perfection, your divine luminosity, your unique spiritual essence. So third density, Earth, is moving right now through the fourth dimension and gradually into the fifth dimension, which is called the New Earth or the Terra Crista or the fifth world or the fifth globe. It's called many things, which will be primarily a fourth, fifth, and sixth density dimensional world. And advanced members of the graduating team, those of you who have perfected your mastery here or maybe come in as a master, may choose to be the guardian, like the star shepherds of the younger brothers and sisters who are now graduating onto Terra Crista, or the New Earth. So there's going to be an advancement of all of you. Some of you will go forth into the realms of immortality. You won't necessarily pass through death. You will pass into you'll be changed in the twinkling of an eye, like St. Paul speaks about in Thessalonians. You'll be changed in that twinkling of an eye, and the mortal flesh will put on incorruptibility, which happens with a shift in the grid field. You can read The Keys of Enoch by Dr. J.J. Hertak for more information on that. Many of you are operating now in those higher bodies of light and don't even realize it because nobody's talking about it. Nobody's telling you. Nobody's giving you reference points. But I'm saying that there is the information out there. A lot of it's been brought through by Dr. J.J. Hertak and his wife Desiree and the Academy for Future Science. But, you know, I've been shown a lot of this before The Keys of Enoch came out. I was shown a lot of this through soul travel and studying on the inner realms with the travelers. So you're in no position to judge really where you are, but always make the best assessment of yourself. Always see yourself in as high a light as you possibly can, because that's going to be closer to the truth than identifying with the areas that we all have, that we have to have to be able to stay on this planet and serve humanity. We have to have imperfections, otherwise we can't stay here. So know that your imperfections are part of your mission. They're part of your assigned equipment, so to speak. You need these things to not only keep you humble and grounded, but also to keep you in a realm where you can relate to humanity. We're not here to parade our perfection. We're here to be God's loving compassion. You know, it's not about our perfection. It's about extending God's love, which is the only perfect thing we can possibly do here. Everything else is immaterial. So people often ask, will there be an evacuation? I like to think of it more in terms of actually the shifting of consciousness to a higher perspective, which may involve being translocated into a craft. My experience with the command, and I have been in many, many war zones, and, well, that's an exaggeration. I've been in one war zone. It was in the Cuban Revolution. But I have also had my body dematerialized where I passed Solarial and I, as I've told you many times, passed through a jackknifed semi-tractor trailer on a dark overpass on a desert road at night where we came upon it had no way to stop. And the unflappable Commander Solario simply said, "We'll be all right." She just kept driving. We drove right through it. That was when the molecular consistency of our bodies and our vehicle was shifted to one that could pass through solid objects. That's a function of one of those five bodies that Dr. Hertak speaks about in a booklet called The Five Bodies is the name of the booklet. It's taken out of the Keys of Enoch, but it describes the five bodies that are extensions of the subtle bodies that I spoke about earlier. They're like an added ability that comes as you move multidimensionally into your higher levels of consciousness. The bodies are upgraded too. I believe, that was a function of the epikinetic body, which would be an extension of the astral body. I believe that was an epikinetic experience that we had there. And I've known other people who had that experience too, where they passed through solid objects. Many times I have been in an earthquake where there was supposed to be devastation and I never experienced it. So again, I think I was shifted slightly off that timeline. So these things happen very, very frequently where there's just a slight shift in your placement in time-space. You're just shifted. This happens so many times that we're not even aware of it. So I want you to be aware of it and not to have any fear around anything in your life. You are part of the saving grace onto planet Earth. And you're very precious. And every one of you is irreplaceable in this mission. And all is well. All is well. Everything is headed in a very good direction right now. So keep an even keel. Keep going and be happy and enjoy. You know, this whole thing is just a big game. Enjoy it. Play it well. Have fun with it. But don't get so into it that you forget who you are, because it's all window dressing and smoking mirrors, and it's all an arena for the training of mastery. That's all. No big deal. I hope this information has been helpful to you. I do extend the heart of the Ashtar Command to each and every one of you with all our love and with blessings to each one of you, your homes, your lives, every area of your lives. Be the light, be the salt, be that which preserves sanity on this planet, and be happy. The best is unfolding as we speak. So let's go out chanting on IHU. Deep breath. On IHU. On IHU. On IHU. The Ashtar Command just said that we also will have a seventh dimension on Terra Crista, which is for the Christed ones. So that'll be it for this evening. God bless you. Happy, holy, sacred, and divinely guided New Year. Namaste.